Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, toy department. This is going to be maybe a toy department first. Should we call this a toy department mini episode?
Yeah, let's call it a mini. And I feel bad because we go from taking a week off to doing a mini. But also, I don't feel bad because I have a life.
Yeah, I don't feel bad at all. I have a very tight timeline at work. There's just stuff I got to do. But we did want to talk about a bunch of the stuff that we
watched. I don't have a tight timeline at work. I just got a pile of shit and a new house to deal with.
And you actually mean a literal pile of shit, I'm going to guess, right?
Well, no, but I could have meant that. I could have meant a literal pile of shit. Luckily, a different adult is dealing with the shit piles at the moment.
Oh, that's good. My dog has this like weird sore on her neck, and so I in the middle of all of the work and all this stuff I have to do, I also got to work in a vet appointment.
That is the worst. Nothing is worse than when your dog has an issue because you don't know what to do and they can't tell you anything and the vet can tell you literally whatever they want.
Yeah, and it could be something that is really minor and maybe it's just a cut, you know what I mean? But it's like
right, like maybe if you just threw some Neosporin on there, it'd be fine in 2 days, but you can't risk it.
I don't really know. Right. And especially because I'm leaving town tomorrow. So it's like, I feel like I got to get it looked at and, you know,
you
doggy band-aids or anything.
What do you do with the pups when you go?
Boarding. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I think is good for her. She likes it. Anyway, we don't have time for dog talk because we have a ton of TV stuff. Let's just dive in with the networks, since this is kind of network premiere season, and we watched a bunch of network stuff this week. I'll give you the we watched what, three network shows? Stumptown, Mixed Dish, and of course The Return of The Good Place.
I wasn't thinking The Good Place is a network show. That's true.
I will give you your choice of where you want to start on this.
Well, let's start easy with The Good Place. Easy, right?
Easy, yes. Easy in terms of discussion. Here's the one thing. Like, I'm still very much enjoying The Good Place, and I think a lot of the things that we have said about it, I think still very much apply. I'm not here to bury the show, but if I could raise maybe just one point, it's getting a little hard to follow, isn't it?
How do you mean?
Like, just the plot, and there's like, you know, there's so many kind of variations on the experiment and people getting their memories erased, and you know, like, especially when you've been away for a while, you know, like understanding where everyone is at is in relation to each other and what they're trying to accomplish is at times tricky for me in this show now. And I don't know, maybe that says more about me.
You know what it says, and I didn't think of this till you started talking about it. All it really says is I just rewatched it.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's it.
The good news is you could probably rewatch the whole thing before next week's episode because there's only three seasons of like 10 or 12 20-minute episodes. You can bang it out so fast, and I suppose it's
– but you get what I mean. It's like –
yeah.
You don't even really need to watch the first season at this point to sort of understand where they're at now.
But is it fair to say that it is complex, but not necessarily complicated? Is that even a thing?
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Because of all the iterations and because of all of the various sort of magical happenings, there is like a complex network of facts that is helpful to have in your head. But like, we know what we're doing here. This is not it's not complicated in a, like, what the hell are they doing, right?
Sort of. What I would say is we know who the good guys are and the bad guys are, and I think I know broadly that they're, you know, trying to win this experiment and, you know, get the judge to side with them over the bad guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, the basic premise is, like, can people improve, right?
Well, that's the subject of the experiment. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all you really need. And you know, Chidi has no memories.
Right, and Chidi has no memory. See, but that part I was like, it had been long enough that I sort of forgot what was, why that was, or, you know.
Well, that's because, we'll just do some background here. That's because they were getting ready to do this new experiment with new people, and the bad place got to pick the people.
Right.
And they picked his ex-girlfriend, and he didn't think he'd be able to keep it together, pretend for her, given like what he knew in his head. He thought he'd just be freaking out the whole time and she'd figure something out
accurately. So they
erased his memories.
Yeah. Okay, all right, see, that's what I mean. Like, there's some institutional memory stuff that I don't know.
Yeah, totally agree with that. That's very true, and I would strongly recommend a quick rewatch at least of last season for anyone who's in on this, because again, it's great and fast.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is it moves really fast. By the way, also surprised they're still doing Blake Bortles jokes. But they did get one in this week, I noticed.
They did. I wonder if there will be a, like, final. I feel like there's – Blake Bortles did this show a favor by sort of wrapping up his meaningful NFL career in time for the show to wrap up. And I feel like at some point someone's going to tell Jason that Blake Bortles is no longer the quarterback of the Jaguars. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like, that joke is out there for them if they want it. And I imagine they want it.
The look on his face when that happens, I think, will be delightful, yeah.
It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to that moment.
Do you have anything you want to say specifically about this episode?
No, this was more piloty than a lot of the opening episodes have been, which I think is a credit to the show not doing that in the past, because there is kind of a new setup every year. But this felt – it was funny. It was good. I enjoyed it. All the acting is as incredible as ever. But it felt like, okay, so here's what we're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, they had some new people to introduce and
yeah,
things like that.
And so, basically, I think, you know, if you're talking like – viewing the final season plot as like a film plot, this was establishing the conceit that Chidi is going to be one of the subjects of the experiment.
Yeah. I may need to recap on where Michael's at some point too. Like,
yeah.
But I guess really, honestly, I should just go back and watch last season again.
Should just go back and watch. It's such a delightful show. And like, I could tell you everything about how Michael got to exactly where he is, but it's more fun to watch Ted Danson do it. He's excellent.
He's always excellent. And like I said, it's still enjoyable, but it has warped my brain a little bit.
I mean, we'll obviously talk about The Good Place when it's all over, and I don't think brain warp will be a problem for you at all.
Do you want to talk about Stumptown?
I do. I don't know if I just overlove Kobe Smulders, but I'm all in on Stumptown. Am I crazy? Tell me I'm not crazy. I thought this was good. This is like a pilot I wanted to see.
I wrote the first line of my notes is not perfect, but the best network drama pilot I've seen in a long time.
Okay. All right. I'm not crazy.
Not crazy.
Yeah, you're right. Not perfect. Of course, few pilots are, but like, if this was an FX show, I wouldn't think twice about being like, yes, let's fucking go.
Yeah. Honestly, now that you say that, I really wish it was an FX show, because this character would be like dropping F-bombs left and right, and I think that would be probably truer to her.
I just wonder if this will go as dark as it seems like it can. Because
It seems pretty dark.
It's not quite Breaking Bad, but she's a dark character. And that can either be something that gets sort of networked over the course of the series to the point where, like, okay, she like displays as dark, but there's really nothing here. or that could be an interesting part of this television show. So I'm excited to see where it goes. And watching what we watched this week did make me wonder if network television is adjusting to the non-network television era by making their own versions of non-network type shows. And that, I think, would be good. That's like a market correction.
Yeah, I feel like that's one strategy. I feel like the other strategy is to go hard the other way into like comfort food. You know what I mean? Which kind of
and maybe
a lot
just
of
happen to pick the right stuff.
Yeah, like if you look at like CBS, like most of what they do is very much in that comfort food zone. You know, here's a Chuck Lorre drama. Here's some multi-camera sitcoms. Here's
more or less just crossing.
Here's procedurals, but they also do stuff like The Good Fight. You know what I mean? Or you know what I mean? They have a few. They do a few of these sort of higher end things, right? They had a Vince Gilligan show a year or two ago, right? Like they try. You know what I mean? And they sort of see what sticks. I feel like, you know what I mean? NBC NBC does a lot of, you know, schlock. With the drama stuff, it's you know, the Dick Wolfs or This Is Us. But then, you know, I think they're pretty adventurous with comedy. Right? So everyone sort of takes their paths, I suppose.
By the way, speaking of comedy, do we want to talk about Stumptown from a plot standpoint? I mean, look, Kobe Smulders, I really think, is a good actress.
I thought she is super charismatic and convincing in this role. You know what I mean?
Yes, and those are the exact two words I had in my mind, and they're the exact two words that this part needs, because she has to be convincing as a veteran who is deeply troubled and struggling to keep her life together, but she also has to be incredibly charismatic, or that character is a depressing bore.
Yeah.
And I thought she was great. Just great. And I just want to – it's one of these things where this show's going to depend on that character being dynamic throughout. And as of now, I want to spend more time with that character.
Absolutely. You know, from the ads that we saw, you know, like they show that one scene where she kind of dresses down the dude who's hitting on her at the casino.
Right.
And you just think it's going to be, all right, here's Kobe Smulders flexing for an hour. It's kind of like the vibe you get from that trailer. And really, like, even that scene is, you know, then followed by her, foolishly losing all of her money. And then, like, you know, like, it being and being drunk and like, yeah, like it's a dark turn. The thing I wonder about, and I feel like it's a real credit to the pilot, like the action scenes in this were gonzo, and I think really as good as not even network TV gonzo, as good as really most of the action scenes you're going to see on TV. You know, when you've got, you know, the scene with her in the car, like coming out of the trunk, and then they do that giant leap. Some of the fight scenes, like this was like really high grade stuff, I thought. And I do sort of wonder, because a lot of it looked expensive.
Right. Is that just they blew their wad in the pilot?
Yeah, like they blow it out for the pilot. Are they going to be able to keep up that kind of intensity on a week-to-week network schedule kind of basis? I don't know how many episodes they have planned of this, but
this is a ridiculous comparison. But I think they can if they do it in a sort of John Wick-y kind of way. In other words, I don't know that they can jump cars off of like half-built highway overpasses every week with people kicking each other inside of them, because that was dope and probably cost a fortune. But she can, like, she's a professional maker of violence, you know, and there can be intense close combat. And the way they shot that scene in the car, I thought was fantastic. And you can do that on the streets. So my hope would be that's a part of it, because that, again, that's part of what Kobe Smulders can do. Like, this woman is incredibly talented. She can be an action like superhero and also play a textured emotional part. I don't know that I would have expected this career from her after How I Met Your Mother, and it's really great.
Yeah, although there are, I think, shades of her How I Met Your Mother character. You know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure, but I mean, think about this. Has Kobe Smulders already had a more successful film career than any of the Friends? I mean, Jason Segel, too, for that matter.
I would say Jason Segel probably has. Jennifer Aniston's film career is maybe a little bit more successful than I think the popular imagination imagines it is.
Maybe, but even so, that's Jennifer Aniston, the it girl of the 90s, which Kobe Smulders was never the it girl. And she's had an extra 15 years, and maybe they're equal.
Like, you know, and Lisa Kudrow and Courtney Cox were in some pretty big movies, you know.
That's true.
I think it's hard because we're now on the, you know, through the looking glass on all of their movie careers, I think.
I'm not trying to diss the Friends.
Yeah.
I love the Friends. I'm just saying it's tough to go from a major hit long-running sitcom to a truly successful film career.
Yeah, agree. This was a really pleasant surprise, though, I thought.
Yep, although this obviously is TV, so but I loved her in it. I really like what they're doing, and I have high hopes.
Yeah, I do too. I am, and you know, we sort of express this. I am a little concerned about what happens when it becomes like case of the week. You know what I mean?
Right. Well,
but hell of a pilot.
There's different ways to do that, and they can do it like, again, an FX show would, or they could do it like, you know, ABC shows of the past have, and that's going to determine how long we watch this show.
Absolutely. But earned a season pass from me after one episode. So
agreed.
So good on you, Stumptown. I, you know, last time we talked about network TV, it was like, oh, this is what a catastrophe.
So hang with me here as we move into our last network program. I feel nearly as positively about Mixed Dish, although I will not be watching it.
I'm curious. Did you watch the episode that aired last night in addition to the pilot?
No, I did not get to that. But also, did you note the strange, slightly Kolski-related footnote about the origin story of Mixed Dish?
No.
I don't know if you remember this. I mean, I'm sure you remember.
Is this about Anders Holm?
It is. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I was aware of that because I watched the pilot, and then I had some old Blackish on my DVR still, and in an old episode of Blackish, they had a promo, you know, coming next season, Mixed Dish, and Anders Holm was still in that role. So I was like, oh.
He played the role in the pilot, and I feel bad. I don't know. I mean, like, Anders and I went to school together. We know each other. We're not close or anything, so it's not like I talked to him, and I don't know why he's not the lead. But when the lead is Mark Paul Gosselaar, I get the feeling it's because they decided to go with Mark Paul Gosselaar instead.
Oh, I don't know. Like, it's interesting. On Wikipedia, it says he left the series before it was picked up by ABC. Where I feel like usually they say he was replaced or fired. You know what I mean?
All right. So hopefully.
So maybe he was on his own. Because it's not like Anders is struggling career-wise. You know what I mean?
No, he's doing a lot of writing. Yeah. And I'm sure he's doing well. But I did think that was funny that he sort of got like the hot. They found a hotter dad for the show.
I think Mark Paul Gosselaar is really...
I mean, they're probably both hotter than me. I'm just saying.
I think he's really good in this.
Yeah, yeah. It would be a very different character if it was Anders.
Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. And like, you know, he's got interesting comedic timing, and
I like him. I even enjoyed the goofy lawyer show he did with Brecken Meyer a few years back, Franklin and Bash, I think it was called. Like, I like dumb TV, and Mark Paul Gosselaar does dumb TV well.
Yeah.
But he's good. Look, everyone on the show is funny, and the idea behind it is pretty hilarious, and I think it's a good comedy, but I feel like I need to lock into the Blackish universe from the beginning, like sometime down the road. I'm not prepared to add this to my weekly life just from a logistics standpoint.
Yeah, I would say at least from the two episodes that I've seen, Blackish is a funnier show.
This is thoughtful, you know?
Yes, they're both like, thoughtful, and I would say this one's probably the more thoughtful of the two. And Blackish maybe leans a little bit more on broad comedy, but Blackish also has some episodes that get very thoughtful. That's part of why Kenya Barris is not is with Netflix now, because he didn't really like the way that ABC was handling his thoughtful episodes. So yeah. He went somewhere else. But, you know, I mean, look, obviously there's a lot in this show that is very personal for me. I sort of figured it out while watching it because they started talking about some ages and years and stuff, that the Rainbow character is like 2 years older than me. So, you know, I didn't grow up on a commune, there's certainly a lot of experiences that I can relate to in being in this world at a time when that just wasn't really a thing.
And the commune really in this show is nothing other than a source for commune jokes, which are funny.
And wardrobe.
And B, just a way to drop these kids into a world where suddenly they learn that they're mixed and have to deal with all the consequences of that as not infants and gradually over time, but sort of all at once.
Yeah.
It's just a way to do all those things at once and not have it seem like, why are you playing all these race dramas at for these teens for no reason?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think I don't know what I'm saying. I guess what I'm saying is like the fact that they're at a commune doesn't actually make it as different from your experience as you'd imagine.
True.
But it's obviously it's less personal to me, but the themes are still resonant.
Yeah.
And I think this is a real going a little bit back in time, dealing with something that seems so normal to us today, but as recently as 30 years ago was totally foreign to people. I think it's a really good way of examining today's race dynamics in America. I mean, I think that's a nice thing to have with a comedy show. And if that means it's a little less funny than Blackish, so that's fine.
Yeah, I agree. The structure, you know, the time structure does also allow them to serve up a lot more blatant casual racism. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, and it's like I reference this a lot. I feel like it's been a year or two on the pod since I brought it up, but a book called The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, that's a collection of short stories about Vietnam, where sort of one of the central themes and a specific theme of one of the stories is when you tell stories about real life, sometimes you have to make them more dramatic in order to actually tell the truth.
Yeah.
In other words, to make people see the real truth, sometimes you have to show them a caricature. And I think that's what this is.
Yeah. We don't have a lot of time left, so can we jump to Hustlers?
I mean, just you loved it, right?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. Really enjoyable.
I mean, if we love, and I know you didn't, but if we as a culture love things like John Wick, of course we will love things like Hustlers. Like, it's not The English Patient, which I hated, so I don't know why I use that as an example. It's not Good Will Hunting. It's not Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but it is exactly what it's supposed to be. And everyone in it is fantastic. And the story comes together in an exciting way. And it's just great. What a great job by everybody. And holy Jesus, Jennifer Lopez at 50.
Yeah. I wrote that in my notes. I'm like, you know, I don't want to spend this podcast ogling Jennifer Lopez or anything.
No, we don't need to. It's obvious. We don't have to spend much time on it.
It's not a lusty thing even. It's just like, wow, I am impressed. Like, you look like that at 50 is amazing.
It's like watching Tom Brady play quarterback at 40.
Yeah.
Or 41.
Exactly. That is the feeling. Like, this is like you're getting an all-time physical performance, if you will.
It's Greg Maddux dicing people up at 39 years old.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, Humans don't get to do that. You're not human. Wow.
Yeah, no 50-year-old should have those naps. That's incredible.
Everything. Yep. Everything about her defies normal human aging. Yep. It's remarkable, and I'm sure whatever people will say, whatever, how much money was spent on it, and that's fine. I don't really care. Tom Brady spends a lot of money on hyperbaric chambers and whatnot.
Honestly, maybe she got some help, but I really think that she just went to the dance studio and spent a lot of time dancing, you know, which we know she can do. Yeah.
There's no question she did that because she is, we talk about convincing, and yeah, she's a great actress. So the being convincing, like emotionally as a, clever stripper is not her greatest challenge as an actress.
No, but I thought it was a really strong performance from her.
It was. No, I'm not criticizing at all. I'm just saying, I thought Out of Sight, for instance, is a more subtle and nuanced part. But the physicality of this is probably the hardest thing she's ever done on screen. And she had to be convincing not just as a stripper and pole dancer, but as the hottest and most in-demand stripper and pole dancer
in New York,
the biggest stripping and pole dancing city in the world. And I was 100% convinced she looked like she'd been doing that as a pro for decades.
Yeah. It's probably the second biggest after Vegas, if we're being honest. But after
Vegas, you're right. Second biggest pole dancing city. My mistake.
Yeah. Come on, let's get these rankings properly. She was great. I think it's interesting that you brought up John Wick because one of the things I wrote down on my notes is this was an action movie without any real action scenes, right? Like there wasn't a lot of people shooting guns or fist fights. I guess there were a few things like that, but mostly
there were some scuffles, but mostly
it was a heist movie kind of, really. You know what I mean? And it was shot that way. Yeah, you know. And it has that tension, and yet there's not a lot of physical violence, which I thought was really interesting. I also thought it was interesting that it's a movie starring mostly people of color, but A, it feels universal, and B, it's it's not really a thing that's even remarked upon at any point. It's just sort of casual diversity, which I enjoyed and felt real to actually being in New York. You know what I mean?
The toy department loves casual diversity.
Yeah. Here's my question for you about this. This is the thing I sort of left wondering because it's clearly a movie that's mostly about female friendships and motherhood. Do you think this is a feminist film?
Well, as a mother, do I think it's a feminist film?
Yeah.
Why not? It's women, to use the parlance of our times, getting their lives.
It certainly is that. I don't
standing
know.
Standing up for themselves. It's a complicated movie about women and female friendship, and it's not like a feminist fight song or anthem. But I do think it's basically feminist.
I think that it really thrives on the audience having a hatred for toxic masculinity. There's a lot of toxic masculinity in this.
Yeah,
but I think you
I know that this plays 10 years ago.
You would have to argue that their response to the toxic masculinity was in fact more toxic than the toxic masculinity. You know what I mean?
Not as toxic anyway. I mean, it depends on your viewpoint, I suppose.
I would say drugging people and robbing them of their life savings is more toxic on the scale of than guys making gross comments. Personally,
I was going a little beyond gross comments.
Yeah,
I don't want to say I completely buy their justification, but I get it.
right. Yeah, no, I get what you mean. I just don't
They are robbing people blind by lying to them and making them think everything's okay. Versus drugging them. I suppose drugging them is more violent in the moment, but is it worse? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Six of one, half dozen of the other. Either way, I don't think this one thing I did not struggle with in this movie was sympathy for the victims.
No, I didn't either. I guess my point in that is I don't think the movie ever really comes to grips with any of, you know, like there are pangs of guilt.
It's not prescriptive in any way.
Yeah. But like it doesn't really like get into the morality too much of what they're doing.
But it doesn't justify it either.
Yeah.
Like they're clearly troubled by the morality of it,
yeah,
to some degree.
Yeah, it just doesn't fully really wrestle on that because it's concerned with being
fun. Not that movie.
Yeah,
but I don't think it ever pretends to be or purported to be that movie.
No. By the way, nice to see Julia Stiles again. I don't know what witness protection program they rescued her from, but I would like more Julia Stiles.
I think Julia Stiles' character actor is a thing that we're gonna get over time, and I'm excited for it.
I'm hoping so. All right, that's going to run out the clock for us. So,
did we miss something?
You good with jumping
into
homework?
We got to everything. I mean, we missed The Spy and Always Sunny, but that's because neither of us were prepared for the show today.
Yeah, so we're going to try to kick those to next week. I've glossed over that.
We're into homework now.
We're into
two
homework
things
now.
We didn't get to: The Spy and Always Sunny. I won't be upset to have two episodes of Always Sunny, though. That doesn't make me sad.
No.
What else did we talk about? You made a list.
Big Mouth is returning, and we love that, and we're excited. Netflix, by the way, also announced that this is going to be the final season of BoJack, which is I'm happy that it's back. Or it's not back yet, but it's coming back, and real sad about that part. There's a Maradona documentary on HBO.
I believe it's called Diego Maradona,
yes.
Or maybe just Maradona.
But I have heard nothing but fantastic things about it. It aired last night, but we're going to talk about it next week.
My radio coworker, Ray Ratto, believes Maradona was the, I don't know if he would say best, but most talented and, like, I guess at his peak, best soccer player of all time. He also believes Diego Maradona is like the worst dude to ever be a great superstar, which is saying a lot. So
yeah,
I'm very excited.
Let's you know, I feel like we may let's wait till we know everything about Cristiano Ronaldo's life before we make that claim.
Yeah, fair enough. But I guess career complete edition, Diego Maradona, leader in the clubhouse.
He might be the leader in the clubhouse on that score. He certainly led an all-time interesting life. And I believe this doc mostly focuses on a singular period of that, but we'll find that out next week. We've also got Between Two Ferns on Netflix, and then I wrote down The Politician on Netflix, which they have been pumping hard, at least on my feed. And it's got Gwyneth Paltrow and some high school election drama.
It's probably just because of all the Goop products you've been buying that they're pushing it to you so hard.
I think I saw Dylan McDermott in there.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, so I don't know. Whatever. It seems like we can check
out a couple episodes. Not being confused with Dermot Mulroney.
I almost did, actually, confuse him with Dermot Mulroney. But he's on Regis Gemstones, right?
Well, they were both on legal dramas in the 90s on network television, so yeah. It's always been hard to keep them straight.
They're in on that joke. All right, it's officially time for me to go, so say that thing.
Okay, bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.